from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn how strength training can cut liver fat by as much as 30% in 15 days. This is published in the Journal of Endocrinology, done at the University of Caminas in Brazil. We have a lot more to go on that, but most of today's program will be focusing upon the contradictions and the conflicts between real science, corporate science, political science, and your health. It's now at a point where more and more physicians are speaking out. These are not alternative or complementary doctors. These are regular mainstream board-certified physicians in all specialties who are now saying that what we've been told as official positions and direction to go concerning the coronavirus don't make sense. I would agree. Now, the coronavirus is real. It is deadly. It's very easily transmissible. But then that's where I would leave everything being said by the government. Then we get into the contradictions. Today, a Montana board-certified physician, Dr. Annie Bukacek, will be on to discuss how the coronavirus death certificates are being manipulated. This is an important discussion. In fact, we have other physicians who are going to come forward and talk about how regular deaths, even pneumonia deaths and flu deaths, are being recast as corona deaths. Who's behind this? The CDC. Who's behind the CDC? Well, a cast of characters, including the director and also Fauci at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Why? Why, if you die of a heart attack or if you have congestive heart failure and they haven't even tested to see if you have coronavirus, would they call it coronavirus death? That's the question we have not answered yet. I'd be interested in your answer. After each of these segments, feel free to call in and share your point of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Also, we keep praising, the left keeps praising, the World Health Organization and its response to the COVID-19. Do you know anything about the head of the World Health Organization? Utterly corrupt. We've written extensively about the corruption of the World Health Organization in the past, so we will continue to give you insights into the director, actual statistics about his engaging in some extremely nefarious activities. Also, why is it that the German scientific community is now showing that the coronavirus might not be fatal as previously thought? We'll hear from a leading virologist, in fact, a professor of biology. And also, what did Anthony Fauci mean when he was behind giving $3.7 million during the Obama era to the Wuhan lab to work on the coronavirus? Well, we want to know that, so we're going to raise that question, but you'll hear from Anthony Fauci in his own words, him predicting a pandemic. But there was no pandemic. And he separates out that this pandemic will be worse than the normal types of diseases and infections we suffer from. Is he a clairvoyant? Is he a psychic? Is he related to Nostradamus? Did he know something the rest of us didn't know? This was in 2017. How did he know? Well, we're going to look into that in greater depth. And Dr. Peter Bragan, who worked for the National Institutes of Health, who's been a research scientist and a physician, board certified, for 60 years, he's giving us a look at an article that was written back in 2015 where they were talking about working on, in effect, weaponizing a COVID virus, which is almost identical to the existing one. This was published in a major peer-reviewed journal. He reads directly from the article. He says he's very troubled as a scientist and as a physician. He didn't know what to make of this. We'll talk about it. So you see, we have a lot to share. We're always at the cutting edge. Let's begin. Strength training can reduce liver fat and improve your blood sugar levels, according to this particular study. What we all need, if you're the average American with a high body mass index, you have a lot of body fat, you want lower fat overall, but you really want to get rid of that fat in the liver. In fact, upwards of 40% of the adult population suffer from non-alcoholic derived fatty liver disease. It can kill you, and does. Now that means tens of millions of Americans, over 100 million Americans, suffer from this, yet no one is talking about it. That's not a pandemic. Heart disease is not a pandemic. Cancer is not a pandemic. Diabetes is not a pandemic. Obesity is not a pandemic. Depression is not a pandemic. Gee whiz. And yet everything in our world has been turned upside down because of this pandemic. Interesting, our priorities, isn't it? This was published in the Journal of Endocrinology. But you ask, maybe you haven't been listening to this program, what is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? Well, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a condition marked by an accumulation of fat around the liver as a result of poor nutrition. As the largest organ inside the body, the liver performs over 500 important functions, including energy production, cholesterol metabolism, detoxification, and protein synthesis. Now, a healthy liver should contain little or no fat at all, as fat can make it difficult for the liver to carry out vital functions. Excess fat can also compromise the liver's sensitivity to insulin and impair its ability to regulate glucose levels. So an individual is considered to be at risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease if more than 5 or 10% of the liver's weight is fat. A fatty liver is also linked to an increased risk of serious conditions like kidney disease, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease. It is a major killer. And also it's linked to type 2 diabetes, which is also a major killer. So anything and everything that we can do to reduce that is good. And now it's showing that power walking, strength training, is also good at reducing heart disease risk, but also fatty liver disease. From the Kung Hee University in South Korea comes an article published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine showing that apoptotic and autophagic effects of skullcap in non-small cell lung cancer. I won't go through the science of this particular Chinese skullcap, but historically, skullcap in traditional Asian countries is used to treat all inflammatory diseases, but it specifically inhibits cancer activity, and especially in the development of tumors. So that's good. So we simply want to add one little piece to the puzzle, and you can look up the research for yourself and read the article. So now we can say it has anti-cancer effects. Now something else that has really good effects is amla, A-M-L-A. Now, amla is a potential modulator for Alzheimer's disease risk factors. This is from the Edith Cowan University, which is in Australia. And what they're saying is that you could help prevent and ameliorate many of the conditions of Alzheimer's, including common dementia, if you are able to turn off the inflammation. And one of the things that can turn off inflammation is amla. It's a fruit, and it's very powerful, much higher in vitamin C and bioflavonoids than oranges, apples, grapes. Amla preparations have been used for centuries in traditional Indian medicine systems, such as Ayurveda, with various parts of the plant used to treat various diseases. So it's just showing that when you go into a health food store, look under dried fruits, or at the nutrition counter of your local health store or online, and see what they're offering in the way of amla, because amla extracts exert very positive effects against conditions like hyperglycemia, inflammation, oxidative stress, apoptosis, and autophagy. all of which contribute to Alzheimer's disease. Also from Washington State University comes a study published in Science Advances that exercise during pregnancy reduces obesity among children as they grow. So all the more reason to do a structured, disciplined exercise program when you're pregnant. And from Ohio State University comes a new study about people may know the best decision and not make it. Well, we've seen that. How often do we do things at the last moment and then we are hesitant about the why we should do something, like going on a diet or starting an exercise program or maybe changing careers or changing jobs or changing environments, but then we are stopped. So when faced with the decision, according to Ohio State University, people may know which choice gives them the best chance of success, but they still take the other option. People may choose based upon a gut feeling, a habit, or what worked for them last time, rather than on what they have learned will work most often, what is sustainable. Now, I did a series of lectures, and one of the lectures, which is being posted today on prn.fm, when you go down the main page, the home page, you'll see all these articles. I believe this is article number 9 out of the ones I've been doing, and I did one Friday and one Saturday. It's in the office tomorrow, and they're very powerful. How to determine the more important meaning of life and honor it rather than what we've been conditioned to live by. Meaning, how many times have you done something right, you done what you were supposed to do, and then still feel what I call the big empty? Because we're conditioned not to disappoint people, especially those who are important in our lives, our parents, our teachers, the peer people around us. They're all giving us encouragement when we do something that aligns with their beliefs and values. But what if it's not a part of our authentic nature and self? So what happens is we end up one day, we wake up, we're 40, 50, 60, 70, and we've lived an authentic life to their needs, meaning we've been a good daughter, good son, good husband, good wife, good neighbor, good friend, good employee, a good citizen. We never question the government. They say, take your vaccines. We line up and take the vaccines. If they say, if you're a soldier, take 20 vaccines to get into the Gulf War, we take 20 vaccines. If some of the people end up sick and dying because of that, we still stay in line for the next vaccine. They say, eat the sugar-coated cereal, we eat the sugar-coated cereal. Wow. If they say, we got the meat and we want more meat, even though we don't need it, we take the more meat. So we are good citizens, but how good is that in the outcome? So what are we lacking in the environmental movement? The answer is, nobody wants to participate in it, including the people like Al Gore. Yeah, he wants to participate to the degree he makes money from it, wins another Nobel Prize or something. But it's just all a big game. Everything's a game. So I'm writing a very searing and thoughtful commentary that I'll give this Wednesday. We're preempted, of course, because I want to go to the people who still believe in this nonsense and play the dancing clown routine. As long as you have a few celebrities show up, I guess it must be real. Yeah. If it's Leonardo DiCaprio, I'll take a pass. Until he stops eating meat, until he stops going out on gigantic yachts, until he stops flying on private jets, and actually acts by his lifestyle that he's a real environmentalist. So environmental organizations I'm taking to task, showing where they get their money and what they don't do anything about. And the average citizen, Greta Thunberg, the manipulation of her, making her something she's not, her parents, something that they hope to be, rich and famous, and all the other people manipulating the environmental movement for new green capitalism, well, that ought to work. But nothing that we have done, when I say nothing, I mean zero, nothing at any level, not the federal, state, local, personal, collegiate, nothing, industry, government, nothing have we done that's right. You can't name anything we've done that's right about stopping environmental degradation, the abuse of the environment. We've done everything to spur it on. And yet we celebrate as if somehow by getting together and making ourselves feel good for one day for some speeches that are meaningless, that we're going to change and transform. A, we're not changing and transforming anything, and B, we're continuing the gluttony that allows us to speed up. So the question is, buy a ticket, get into a recliner chair, put on your virtual reality outfit, and watch what comes at us. But as long as it's not coming at you, then it's just not real. So I'm writing an editorial on this. I'll give it on Wednesday. In any case, so when I'm looking at what's going on in the world today, and I'm seeing people know better but do against their own best interest, society knowing better and doing against its interest, governments never do anything right. I mean, never, and they're utterly corrupt. So then is it any surprise that we don't do what is right? So I did a lecture on this, and that lecture is being posted today. Stop lying, start living. That's the title of the lecture, Stop Lying, because everyone I know lies all the time about everything. It's not that a few people lie, it's everybody lies about everything. So only maybe 3 to 5% of the public are able to be honest because they're not afraid of the consequences of being honest. Go back to what I said, intentional neglect. We neglect the honesty of all things because if we saw the truth of that honesty, we would be forced by some inner sense of commitment to a higher ideal, a spiritual value, to make changes. We don't want to make changes. No one you know wants to make changes. People every day I meet who are dying, when I tell them there is a way not to die, they would rather die with their comfort than change. Yeah, be in my shoes and see that happen 95% of the time. Yeah. So we are a nation of pathological liars. All the time, everyone, everywhere. And if you think you know someone who's honest, let me have a conversation with them and see within that honesty. I'll give you one example. I care about my health. I don't want to lose my health. Mm-hmm. What's wrong? Well, they want us to have mandatory vaccines. So, what's wrong with mandatory vaccines? Well, I don't want a mandatory vaccine. They want to give us the COVID virus vaccine when it comes out, make it mandatory. New York State's already included it last Friday. New York State did? Yeah. So I went up online and I looked, and sure enough, New York State, hey, now there's an honest group of politicians, Governor, right? We can trust them. They have only our interests at stake and only children's interests at stake, and they want to help us. So they've made it mandatory. So I went to look. Sure enough, New York Senate bill, it's an act to amend the administration of the COVID-19 vaccine. So when the vaccine becomes available, if you live in New York, you're going to get it. But then Bill Gates wants to make this nanotechnology where everybody would have this implant into their arm or shoulder. So no matter where you go, it would read it, and it would read your whole medical background and if you've had all your vaccines or not. Well, I wonder what they could do then if you decided not to have a vaccine. Would you be excluded like in China? Would they shame you as they do in China, where if you have jaywalked and you get on a plane, everyone's phone rings and you look and they see your picture, and there you are. This person is not a good citizen. They jaywalked, or they did something that we don't like, and therefore you get credits for being a compliant citizen, or you get demerits for not being, in which case they shame you. They can also keep you from being on that plane or bus or restaurant or theater or traveling. And that's coming now to America. And we will just line up to get that stuff. So I asked this person, I said, okay, so you don't want this vaccine? No, I just heard about this could be mandatory. I said, okay. You are aware that in New York where you live, all the children must take a vaccine, including toxic, deadly vaccines that kill them, like the Gardasil vaccine that has no value at all and is based upon a flawed mathematical model of safety and efficacy. Yeah. Did you protest? No. Did you protest mandatory vaccines at any point? Did you join those people who were protesting? No. Nope. What have you protested? Nothing. So you've protested nothing. Did you protest the Vietnam War? Did you protest Iraq invasion? Did you protest Monsanto and genetically engineered food? Did you protest, you know, nuclear power? Did you protest anything? Nope. Did you protest against in behalf of civil rights? No. Nope. Women's rights? No. Nope. So you're 73 years old. You've never protested against anything, so therefore you go along with everything. Is it reasonable to assume that what you don't protest, you're in alignment with? Well, I mean, I don't know. So you stay intentionally ignorant on things that will discomfort you if you actually had to commit yourself to something, possibly. When you have the courage to protest, do your homework, show that you're not afraid to commit yourself to those causes that liberate us, free us, then step forward and say, I shouldn't have a vaccine until such time when they come, if they come and say you must have a vaccine, you can cry, you can scream, but that's the consequences when a nation turns its back on everything that we should be facing and confronting. It's like the students. On the one hand, we should forgive the 1.6 trillion student debt so that, A, for very pragmatic reasons, now they will have some capital that they can spend on things they need, basic necessities like rent and car payments, and utilities and food, medicine, and socializing, whatever they choose to. But now they don't have that money. They have to borrow it from someone who may not have it either. But when was the last time you saw a strike of all the students, all the professors, all the teachers, all the tenured and non-tenured, all the adjuncts together saying the system is corrupt? The educational system is corrupt. The curriculum is corrupted. It's been privatized and profitized. So let's say no. 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 Not even one demonstration. So I should go out and demonstrate and write and do a documentary on behalf of those people who won't do it for themselves. That's something to think about. You'll hear all this discussed in depth in an hour and a half lecture that will be posted later today that I did for this group called Stop Lying, which we do, Start Living, which we're not. And hopefully we can get beyond a lot of this. Anyhow, New York has passed this bill. Should that surprise anybody? No. Will you still elect these people? Of course. Would we elect Bill Clinton today? Of course. Even if the only people he had on his cabinet were all interns, of course we would. Jeez, man, we are so screwed. But we're not in enough pain yet. We will be very shortly. That's the latest on health. We're going to take you now to some people who have something to talk back against the coronavirus. And it's good that we hear them, because you're not going to hear this anywhere in the mainstream media or the alternative media. You're not going to hear it out of the White House or any of the halls of Congress. You'll hear it here. We're going to begin when we come back from a break. In fact, you know what? Let's go directly to this, not even a break, because I want to get as many of these in as possible. Let's hear from a Montana physician, Dr. Annie Bukasak. She discusses falsifying death certificates. Now, why is this important? Because think of it this way. If they're saying all these people died because of the coronavirus, and therefore it's a pandemic and we have to stay in our homes and social distance, etc., which would be reasonable, but what if their statistics are lies, intentionally lying? Because that's what physicians, and we have a lot that you're going to hear this week, regular, not alternative, not holistic, just regular board-certified physicians who've been in the trenches for decades are saying. They're told they must lie and falsify death certificates. Therefore, the actual number of people dying of the coronavirus could be 10% real and 90% false, because they're attributing all of them to the coronavirus, including, look at the latest statistic, Richard Gell and I published a government chart. It shows you that pneumonia and flu deaths just drop down to zero. You mean we don't have any deaths from pneumonia and the flu in America this year? It's all under corona. But that's not a corona. Yeah, they're making all this happen, and the media is complicit by not challenging it. We're going to challenge all this starting now.
Excessive commentary. So I'm going to talk about death certificates today. The decision for unprecedented government-mandated lockdowns has been based on the alleged death rate of COVID-19. Is this death rate based on truth? I posted the following question on Facebook yesterday. This is the question. Know anybody personally with baseline good health who has been hospitalized for COVID-19 alone or allegedly died from COVID-19? That was my question. I ask the question this way because if you know someone personally, you may know their baseline health status and some details of the case. And being tested positive for COVID-19 does not mean you have the disease. Even asking the question this specifically, I still got some people saying their spouse knows a friend of a friend who's of a nephew in New York. And some who answered yes but didn't give the details, even though I asked them, could you please submit some more details? I got over 350 comments and received dozens of no answers, if not scores. Last I counted, there were three or four who answered yes and said their case fit the criteria, and they gave me some details. But even those three or four, giving them the benefit of the doubt that they were answering honestly to the best of their knowledge, does that mean the person they described was actually stricken with COVID-19? Inquiring minds want to know, are the reported deaths from COVID-19 truly deaths from COVID-19? To address this question, we need to discuss death certificates, since death certificates are the basic source of information about mortality. The discussion of death certificates is not a fun one. We have all grieved so many losses in our lifetimes. Still, we need to talk about it because they are the basis of the so-called death rate of COVID-19. History-changing decisions are being made due to these figures, despite the fact that they are flat-out wrong, based on data that is insufficient and often inaccurate. Few people know how much individual power and leeway is given to the physician, coroner, or medical examiner signing the death certificate. How do I know this? I've been filling out death certificates for over 30 years. More often than we want to admit, we don't know with certainty the cause of death when we fill out death certificates. That is just life. We are doctors, not God. Autopsies are rarely performed, and even when an autopsy is done, the actual cause of death is not always clear. Physicians make their best guesstimate and fill out the form. Then that listed cause of death, whatever we list, is entered into a vital records data bank to use for statistical analysis, which then gives out inaccurate numbers, as you can imagine. Those inaccurate numbers then become accepted as factual information, even though much of it is false. So, even before we heard of COVID-19, death certificates were based on assumptions and educated guesses that go unquestioned. When it comes to COVID-19, there is the additional data skewer that is, get this, there is no universal definition of COVID-19 death. The Center for Disease Control, updated from yesterday, April 4th, still states that mortality, quote-unquote, data, includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. That's from their website. Translation, the CDC counts both true COVID-19 cases and speculative guesses of COVID-19 the same. They call it death by COVID-19. They automatically overestimate the real death numbers by their own admission. Prior to COVID-19, people were more likely to get an accurate cause of death written on their death certificate if they died in the hospital. Why more accurate when a patient dies in the hospital? Because hospital staff has physical exam findings, labs, radiologic studies, etc., to make a good educated guess. It is estimated that 60% of people die in the hospital. But even those in hospital deaths, the cause of death is not always clear, especially in someone with multiple health conditions, each of which could cause the death. Clear-cut causes of death might include traumatic brain injury, say from a car accident, intractable seizures or asthma, sepsis from overwhelming infection, respiratory arrest from a COPD exacerbation, ruptured aneurysm, metastatic cancer, massive acute heart attack, stroke, or pulmonary embolism. I will talk more in a little bit about why inaccuracy in the cause of death has declined for hospital deaths with the introduction of COVID-19 testing. There are also unclear causes of death in ambulances. That's a reality. An example would be someone with multiple deadly conditions who gets short of breath and dies before evaluation can be done. Was it the patient's underlying lung disease or heart disease that caused the shortness of breath, that caused them to call the ambulance? Or was there a concomitant pneumonia or other problem? We don't know because the patient died before the incident could be evaluated. So an estimated 60% of people die in the hospital. As to the other 40%, it is estimated about 20% of people die at home and 20% in nursing homes in this country. The true cause of death in these situations usually remains unknown. The death certificate is filled out with the best educated guess. Unknown causes of death include elderly people or younger people with known heart disease who die peacefully in their sleep. It is not acceptable to list old age as a cause of death, even though that may be more accurate than the cause of death we often list on the death certificate. We are allowed to state as a cause of death atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, and that may be our best guess in a lot of these cases. But is it truly the cause? Who knows? Only God in heaven knows. Amen? So allow me to give a real-world example. One of my patient's fathers died about 17 years ago. He was old and in the final days of terminal cancer. He also had heart disease, but was too old and too sick to get heart bypass surgery. As he got near the end of his life, he came down with what appeared to be pneumonia. As my patient, this man's son, stood by his father's sickbed at home, the man died. No one else was there. The mortician was called and removed the body at about 2 a.m. The next day, the funeral home called and asked my patient, the son of this man, what time did he die and what was the cause? The death certificate listed the man's son's best guess. The cause of death made by the deceased man's son was made official. He was cremated, so there was no second opinion. This man didn't even have any medical training that gave the diagnosis to the mortician. This happens all the time, especially in poor urban areas, casual country towns, and rural areas. In the case of my patient's father, did an accurate cause of death matter? Not really. But today, when governments are making massive changes that affect our constitutional rights, and those changes are based on inaccurate statistics, it does matter. There's a U.S. standard for death certificates that includes a line for immediate cause of death, followed by 2 to 3 lines of antecedent causes giving rise to the immediate cause, then 1 to 2 lines of other significant conditions contributing to the death but not causally related to the immediate cause. For an example, immediate cause of death, sepsis, antecedent cause, pneumococcal pneumonia, other significant conditions, COPD. Okay, let's combine the information I've given you so far about the guesswork involved in filling out death certificates and apply it to COVID-19. The analysis that follows requires the presupposition that in today's medical climate, many, if not most, patients sick enough to be hospitalized will be checked for COVID-19. It also requires an understanding of what we know at this point, that most people who test positive for COVID-19 have mild or no symptoms. Therefore, testing positive for COVID-19 does not mean a person is sick with it, or if the person died, that they died from it. To drive this home, we need to understand how the CDC and National Vital Statistics System are instructing physicians to fill out death certificates related to COVID-19. Brace yourselves and please pay attention and let what I'm about to tell you sink in. The assumption of COVID-19 death can be made even without testing. Based on assumption alone, the death can be reported to the public as another COVID-19 casualty. The March 24th, 2020 National Vital Statistics System memo states, and I quote, "The rules for coding and selection of the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19 being the underlying cause more often than not." End of quote. The CDC report of cases in the U.S. memo from yesterday states the death numbers are preliminary, quote, and have not been confirmed. So, quote, the results are preliminary and have not been confirmed, end of quote. It's from the CDC website. Here's a quote even more laden with meaning. Stephen Schwartz, National Director of the Division of Vital Statistics, says in answer to the question as stated in the organization's COVID-19 alert, quote, should COVID-19 be reported on the death certificate only with a confirmed test? Check out his answer, and I quote from this memo of which I have a copy, quote, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. Certifiers should include as much detail as possible based on their knowledge of the case, medical records, laboratory testing, etc. End quote.
Now, mind you, you'll be hearing this week multiple individuals saying the same thing. The pushback has started. Let me put this in just simple language. Right now, we're finding out that the people most susceptible to dying are people in nursing homes or critical care facilities. Why? They're there because they have multiple comorbidities, meaning multiple diseases like congestive heart failure, cancers, pneumonia, obesity, or related conditions such as diabetes and obesity. They are going to die in those environments almost 100%. And yet, without doing an actual biopsy, or let's say without doing an autopsy, as long as someone in there has the virus, they're saying all these people died. Now, you add that up, and I've gotten two numbers. One this morning is 7,000, and another is 12,000. That would mean the highest single group of people dying in the United States, this also applies worldwide, are people who were old and sick, that their age and their illnesses and even air pollution, none of that is considered. It's just a virus. That's how they have manipulated the science. And this is just, if any student tried to get a thesis through, to get a doctorate or a master's degree in public health by saying that, well, we assumed everybody died of the same thing, even though these people had years, decades of life where they were sick and getting sicker until they were at the end stage of the disease, and, oh, they had the virus, that's what killed them. It's not what killed them. Their underlying diseases killed them. Now, here's another something. This is Germany, and they have universal health care there. So they don't have the competition of pharmaceutical giants and other people who profit off their system. Here's the professor, one of the top virologists in Germany, reporting on their first major study. This is an eye-opener. You won't see or hear this anywhere else in the mainstream media.
Professor Heinrich Streeck. He's a director of the Institute of Virology and the Institute for HIV Research at the University of Bonn. Professor, good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for joining us. Where you've done a lot of testing, and the encouraging result of that is a much lower death rate than previously thought.
Yes, so what we did was a representative study within this area where we had a high prevalence of cases already. So it got hit pretty hard by COVID-19. But the surprising part, what we found was that there were 15 people, 15% in that population that didn't know that they had an infection. And overall, that we are calculating a case fatality rate, so how many people are actually dying of that disease in that population, is 0.37%. So this case fatality rate is not actually different probably in other countries, but that we can assume a pretty high rate of infections that are asymptomatic.
Does this suggest to you that the prospects originally of herd immunity are ones we can believe in and we can hope for, or do we still need to take an approach of containing this virus in all nations where possible?
So the initial containment is important because we also in Germany had some super spreading events where we had many people infected at the beginning. And this led to like an overwhelming of the healthcare system. But if you're now in that phase to stop this super spreading event, and you're starting this typical measures of hygiene and social distancing, we are now seeing that these are enough measures to actually contain or control the viral spread enough that at least in Germany, our healthcare system is not going to be much overwhelmed. So we're going to stay within our capacity of intensive care units, beds.
Professor, there's been a lot of talk so far.
Okay, so here's what he's saying. He's saying when they took a look at the people in a community that was ravaged by the coronavirus, people were sick, that much of the population already had the coronavirus, but no symptoms whatsoever. Well, how is that possible? Their immune systems. It's a weak virus. So who dies? The vast majority of people dying have very weakened immune systems. And so then they took a look at the actual mortality rate, and it was 0.3%, which means that 99.7% of the people who had the virus are not dying from it. But if you take a look at only the subset, meaning you take a look at people who are near death normally, who have multiple comorbidities, who are sick, those people have a higher incidence of death. It can go anywhere from 2.5% to up to 10% of a group. So if you went into a nursing home, those people are dying. They're in the nursing home to die, all right? And they have all these diseases. They're going to have a very high statistical. If you went into hospice care, you would have 100% mortality if you had the coronavirus, but it wasn't the coronavirus that caused you to die. You were in hospice care because hospice care is the last step before that your life is over. So, but if you go to the general population, a high percentage probably have had the virus, but like a very weak flu, they didn't have any symptoms or mild symptoms. Now, then that brings us to the next state. Okay, so people have the virus, then they must be protected, right? They have the antibodies. Their body has fought it off and have left antibodies behind. No, again. They're wrong. This whole idea of herd immunity is wrong. It's never been played out scientifically. This is according to today's Forbes from Marley Coyne. Quote, coronavirus antibodies may not make you immune, World Health Organization warns. Quote, there is no evidence to suggest that recovered coronavirus patients and former asymptomatic carriers who have coronavirus antibodies in their blood will have long-term COVID-19 immunity. Okay? So what serological tests, also known as antibody tests, do show is whether a person has contracted the virus in the past, but the level of antibodies alone does not necessarily indicate future immunity. Quote, nobody is sure, end quote, said Executive Director of Emergency Programs, Dr. Michael Ryan, of the likelihood that someone with antibodies could be reinfected. Ryan added that some tests give false positive results, while someone who is, quote, generates a full-blown immune response, end quote, detectable by serological tests, could likely expect immunity for some time. We just don't know what that time period is, end quote. So let me break this down simply. Let's say that you end up being okay, there's no adverse health at all you can notice, but you get tested and suddenly you have some antibodies. Can you be reinfected? Yes, we're seeing that. Can you come down with the virus again? Yes, we've seen that. Have people been freed from the hospital, considered now cured, and then relapse back in? Yes, we've seen that. This goes back to the whole fundamental flaw in vaccinology, which is conferring immunity. When you got the chickenpox and you got the measles and you got the mumps, you're immune for life. You will never get that again. But when you get a vaccine, a chickenpox or measles vaccine, you're not conferred to life. That's why they have to keep giving booster after booster. That's why the herd immunity, where more than 97% of a population were fully immunized, supposed to be protecting them, then the people got the worst cases of the measles were those who had been immunized. So not only did it not protect them, it now made them susceptible to other conditions, including herpes zoster and shingles. So the whole principle, and I had this discussion with Dr. Tony Bart before she died. I said, Can you show me any references in the scientific literature that an antibody, even in and of itself, just the presence of antibodies, is protective? She says, no. She said, the assumption has been that if you have antibodies, then you're protected. But the reality is, we've had people with no antibodies who don't get a disease, and those with a lot of antibodies who get the disease. She said, it's an assumption that has been wrong all along, but science has refused to look at it. By the way, this just came up today. This is from Pranav Reddy of undark.org. Pollution kills 9 million people a year. How is that okay? Recent studies put the vast human and economic toll of global pollution into sharp relief. Will lawmakers respond? The answer is, of course they won't. They haven't. They won't. And therefore, over 10 years, that's 90 million Americans have died. 90 million people in the world have died. Do we care? No, we don't care. We care about profits from those polluting factories, or it's not important to us. Shouldn't we consider what happens when your body is already sick from pollution and you're going to die from pollution and then you test positive for coronavirus? Is that a legitimate statistic to use? No, it is not. But that's what we're doing. Then we have this, and this is from Naomi Klein, or excuse me, Naomi Wolf. Raised questions about pigs and COVID-19. And she's saying here that patient zero, COVID-19, was it a pig? Quote from Naomi Wolf. A coronavirus was transmitted via the feces and intestines of diseased piglets. This group of Chinese scientists tested 45 farm workers in China in 2018 and found that pigs could transmit the virus to humans, a cause of high COVID in Smithfield plant, end quote. So what she's saying here, and we'll try to get her on the program to do an in-depth discussion, is could people eating infected pigs end up with the COVID virus that way? And she's saying, yes, we should be examining this. Quote, fatal swine acute diarrhea syndrome caused analysis of viral samples from deceased piglets show that a bat coronavirus was responsible for an outbreak of fatal disease in China. Why weren't we told this? Because the Chinese people don't eat bats, and the bat that was attributed to be the cause is 700 miles from the Wuhan laboratory. But pigs are eaten every day in China. So did we create a virus that is spreading out of control? Let us now hear, at least partly, from the issue of why we should be concerned about this. And I'm going to hold off till tomorrow to deal with challenging the head of the World Health Organization. And by the way, this is from the New York Times. Quote, their death pits. Virus claims at least 7,000 lives in U.S. nursing homes. More than 6 weeks after the first coronavirus deaths in a nursing home outbreaks unfold across the country, about a fifth of U.S. virus deaths are linked to nursing home facilities. Okay. So would you say that someone dying of disease in a nursing home is a legitimate statistic to use to compare everyone else's likelihood of dying? So if they're dying of heart disease, could you say that if you don't change your diet and change your lifestyle, you could die of heart disease, end up in a nursing home? Yeah, you could. But what if you then introduce a virus in there that was not the cause of putting them in the near death to begin with? They were going to die. Then it's not legitimate to use those people in your vital statistics. It is a skewing. Now, I've done 44 clinical studies. I am a scientist. I spent 33 years as a senior research fellow and the director of anti-aging medicine at the Institute of Biology. We had a big viral department downstairs. I was dealing with virologists every day and bacteriologists. And I can tell you that nothing that we're being told is based upon legitimate science. If it were, we would exclude the death by other causes of morbid cofactors such as diabetes, heart disease, that the person was actually dying from. And then we would compare a group of people who have no underlying health problems and who get infected. Did they die? If so, how many? over what period of time were there symptoms, and then you compare the same age person who has multiple comorbidities and then see who dies fastest. Then you can't then say, well, then everyone is equally liable to get sick and die. That's not true. And yet all their policies have been based upon these flawed epidemiological and statistical. So we're going to end our program today. No, you know what I'm going to do? I don't want to cut Peter Bregan short. I'm going to share this. I think you'll find this of interest. I'll get as much of this in as possible. And this is what this says. The gangster head of the World Health Organization from Countercurrents, Thomas Mountain, quote, "The head of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros, was a senior capo for the Tigray People's Liberation Front, gangster mafia that ruled Ethiopia from 1991 to 2018. During that time, he served as health minister and foreign minister, cementing his credentials as a member of the inner circle of what was one, if not the most corrupt, brutal, and genocidal regime to set foot on this planet in the past 30 years. From 2007 to Ethiopia's peaceful revolution in 2018, Dr. Tedros was complicit in the TPLF's crime of genocide against the Somalia people of the Ogaden with the genocidal blockade of food and medicine to the region. He was part of expelling the Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders from the Ogaden during a series of cholera outbreaks and in helping deny medicine to the Somali Ogadenis. He oversaw the deaths of untold thousands during a series of historical droughts, famines, and epidemics. Dr. Tedros did not just cover up cholera epidemics. He was complicit in a medicine blockade to those affected. And this gangster is today the head of the World Health Organization. How the hell did this happen? Deja vu, Anthony Lake, the CIA, and UNICEF. In 2016, a revolutionary situation was developing in Ethiopia, with the TPLF's mafia days clearly numbered. Dr. Tedros read the writing on the wall and made himself, quote, available to serve the interests of Pax Americana at the UN. Being the USA is the major contributor to the World Health Organization. His vetting for its head by the CIA was a must, having demonstrated suitability for the job of overseeing genocide made him eminently qualified, and during the early days of the Trump regime in 2017, he made his move from the sinking ship of the Addis Ababa to Switzerland and the fat salaries of the UN. Today, he finds himself on the hot seat with a 100-year pandemic raging. For almost 3 years, he remained quiet about almost total lack of preparation at the World Health Organization for what numerous panels had warned was inevitable: a highly contagious and deadly virus quickly spreading across the world. Where were the stockpiles of protective supplies that public health professionals called for repeatedly? Where were the stockpiles of medical equipment? Where were the testing kits the esteemed doctors urgently spoke of? Where was Dr. Tedros holding press conferences expressing the urgency of the matter? No. Raising hue and cry about the potential for disaster predicted by his professional colleagues? No. Dr. Tedros was missing in action. To put it simply, his silence was deafening, just as was his silence when his comrades in the once Marxist-Leninist Hoxha TPLE mafia in Ethiopia blockaded medicine during a cholera epidemic. No preparation leads to crisis management, and by this failure of leadership in the face of global crisis, but then what should we expect from someone who made his bones complicit in mass murder in the Ogaden, end quote. And that is something that you will not hear from anyone. Plus, he's Chinese. He's carrying the water for China and trying to downplay it. We'll get into that. How many times he was wrong, not needing face masks, not having to public distance, continue traveling, not in China. Oh, no, they wouldn't allow that. But travel anywhere else in the world, knowing 17 days in advance that there was a major problem and keeping that information, not going in and demanding immediate inspection, allowing that the Chinese government destroyed evidence of the virus's capacity and records, so nobody could audit them and see what really went wrong, who was responsible and why. And then after disavowing that this was a pandemic or even a serious situation, then and only then saying, oh yeah, we got a pandemic. More to come on tomorrow's program. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.